This is The Producers, a podcast. The biggest names in audio production, station sound, radio imaging, branding, and voiceover. Interviews, tips, tricks, advice. To be a part of the show, visit RyanOnTheRadio.com. Now, The Producers with Ryan Dreen.
Here we go. Podcast time. And everything in life just sort of gets in the way. You know, I anticipated getting this out last week, first week of February. With apologies, they do get delayed sometimes. But it's worth the wait because Justin Case is the guest. And in fact, I will not ramble on too long in the intro, just except to tell you that it is Justin. He's coming up. Justin is a big time imaging producer. I think we can officially say that. In fact, it's kind of fun because he stayed in, you know, not a major market for quite a while, got his chops, became sort of big in the DJ world. But then decided, you know what? I'm going to take over imaging. So now he does America's Morning Show with Blair Garner. In fact, if you've been reading the trades recently, that has been spreading like wildfire across Cumulus country stations in the morning. A very high profile gig for him to do. The Ace and TJ show, also XHRM San Diego, XHTZ San Diego, KOAS, KCYE Las Vegas. Some pretty good calls there, amongst about 20 other clients that he handles on a regular basis, radio imaging wise. So Justin Case knows his stuff. He is also the director of programming and imaging at Benstown Branding. So lots of imaging stuff to discuss, and we will get to it. Real quick, coming up, I've already mentioned George Whittam. We had that one getting locked in as of last year. He and I already discussed it. We're going to have a real good tech-centered interview. He's the engineer to the stars. He knows his way around a studio, especially in regards to the sole proprietor-type talent, voiceovers and producers of the world. He really knows the gear. So George is going to be a great guy to get some time with. And I actually was interviewed by some folks in London, and it was very, very cool of them. They like to get perspectives of people around the country, I mean, around the world, sorry, as far as how they work. Anyway, it's the team, Chris Nickel and his team at Capital FM and Capital Networks. They have an amazing operation. They have great talent there. I'm still getting over the great Texas winter allergy thing. Anyway, I'm going to have what I think might be 8 different people on the show at one time. You know, I was kind of worried about having round tables with 2 or 3 people. Well, screw it. Why not? We just go to 8 people. So we're also going to be working that out in the next couple months. I think that one will be really cool because they have some young folk on their team, some veterans, a ton of talent, as I said, but they do a lot of work all the time. And managing a big team like that, I think there'll be some new information to be gleaned from that on this podcast to the listeners. So that's it. Justin Case interview now. We'll hear some of his CHR demo audio. And don't forget to check my site, as there'll be a link to a SoundCloud with all sorts of other great demo audio from Justin Case. And there's a Facebook link and everything. It's a 2-parter, by the way. I don't know if I mentioned that. So here's the beginning of part one with Justin Case.
Jammin' Z90. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Here we go.
DJ Khaled. Hey, Sat Rocky. Yo, what's up? This is Robin Thicke, and you are listening to
101.5.
Hey, it's Bruno Mars.
This is Justin Timberlake.
You know I love it.
Today's best music is right here.
Hey, guys, it's Selena Gomez.
Slow down the sun.
Guys, one night of Maroon. We're from Maroon 5. Maroon 5 and Kelly Clarkson.
Hey, what's going on? It's Kelly Clarkson.
Turn it up. 101.5 WBNQ.
All right, and for 2014, it is a privilege to welcome to the podcast Mr. Justin Case, the realest name of all real names. Justin, thanks so much for being on the podcast, man.
Yeah, man, thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here, glad to kick it off for 2014.
I know. I was aware of you a while ago, years ago, I guess. But we finally met, quote unquote, over the phone, last year sometime, and I know you have a lot going on. So there's a lot of cool areas of this business to talk to you about. But you also have some really cool stories, or at least one story that stuck out in my mind. You've done some things.
I've done a few things in my time, I guess. Yeah, absolutely.
So I might do this. I'm always trying to sort of mix up the format here.
Sure.
I'll get into your background as we move along, but what area of the business excites you most, and I guess vis-a-vis, what would you like to talk about first?
Oh, man, you know, I that's a good question. I think that's the area of the business that excites me the most right now really is imaging. You know, this is kind of the first time for me in a really long time where I've gotten to just focus on imaging and, you know, mm-hmm. not be on the air and not have to do, you know, like side commercial production work or whatever it is, and kind of really focus on imaging and hone my skills and my crafts. And that's kind of where I'm really most excited about. And obviously, you know, Bennstown, you know, we hang our hats on imaging. And so that's what I'm really, really into. Right now and kind of spreading my wings and doing different formats and all that kind of stuff. So it's been a good time.
Yeah. And so I bring that up and that's great that you start there. Would I be safe to say that this is your main job? Because again, I know you have a lot of things going on, but your main job, sort of your day job, is working out of the Bennstown facility, the Bennstown complex there in L.A.?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm the director of programming and imaging for Bennstown, so I oversee all of the programming efforts that happen here at Bennstown, and of course, along with Andy, our CEO in Germany, I oversee all the production libraries, all of our VO roster, our imaging directors, our format captains that oversee all the different formats for the libraries, all that good stuff. So yeah, definitely my full-time number one focus is Bennstown, for sure.
Now, you brought up Andy, Andreas Sonnemann, Andy, and Ollie, another guy who helped start Bennstown. Those mm-hmm. two are the German contingent of the company, and I had them both on my show a long time ago, actually. I worked for them. I worked for Chachi, you know,
yeah.
the Bennstown crew.
Yeah.
I very much enjoyed it. I enjoyed the people there, and you were obviously a pretty important hire because they were basically doing everything creatively from Stuttgart. So I guess my question would be, you handle overseeing, as you just said, a lot of that. As far as the creative, are those guys still involved sort of day to day, or are they now focused on big picture? What's their involvement with you?
Yeah, absolutely. Andy still produces the CHR library himself from Stuttgart, and he does a hell of a job with it. Ollie oversees all of our jingle processes for the most part. So we have a jingle division of the company, and so they oversee a lot of our foreign jingles. And Ollie handles a lot of the composition as well for the music beds and that type of stuff. We've got a guy, Shane, mm-hmm. Here locally. Who does all the music beds as well. But yeah, Andy is a major, major part of the CHR library and obviously the day-to-day of the libraries and getting ideas and thoughts out there for all of our guys and gathering all the info for everybody every week in terms of like what new brandings everybody is going to produce, you know, custom music intros for the libraries and that type of stuff. So yeah, they're both very, very still heavily involved, absolutely.
And but now, you know, they brought you in the last, has it been a year? Have you been there over a year?
Yeah, just about. It's been like a year and 2 or 3 months or something like that. Year and some change.
Okay. And so obviously a pretty important hire, though, because you have a very good pedigree. But tell me, you know, give people an idea of the size. I think I've brought up Bennstown over time. You know, obviously I went to work for a competitor,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, I'm still
right.
friends
we'll
with
you.
Everybody. Yeah. So I have a bit of knowledge of the inner workings of Bennstown. But anyway, give people an idea of the size, how many libraries, how many producers you have working on your libraries, and how many stations are clients of the libraries?
Yeah, we've got all in between all of our products, you know, VO imaging services, you know, syndicated shows, all that good stuff, custom imaging, just about 2,000 affiliates all over the world, really, all over the country, all over the world. In terms mm-hmm. of production libraries, there's 19, just about one for every format. And then in terms of having the producers that produce all those libraries, I think that there's, off the top of my head, like 11 or 12 different guys that oversee all the different libraries, their own individual formats. Mm-hmm. Some guys, myself included, handle multiple format libraries. And then we've got, you know, on our custom imaging side of things, we've probably got a stable of, you know, I'd have to look at the site real quick. Off the top of my head, maybe like 20 or 30 guys that handle various custom imaging packages for different clients all over the place. So it's a pretty big.
That's kind of that that barter model where stations can come in and say, all right, I'd like to give up some barter time and I want to get my own producer and my own voice. Yeah. That's what you're talking about?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So we offer anything from the voiceover side of that to where they can pick out a voice from our stable of fantastic VO people. And then same thing, if they want to have somebody produce that, they can do that. Or they can get a production library to go on top of that. So really, you know, it's any of the ingredients you might need to put a station together, whether it's just the voice or just the producer or all in plus a production library. You know, any of that good stuff.
Mm-hmm. And you said 19 formats. I mean, that's pretty massive. So you guys are still doubled up on a few formats, right?
We are, yeah. We're doubled up on most formats. So we just about, cool. I guess it would be maybe 2 years ago now, we took over curating all of the Cumulus libraries. So we had one library for just about every format, and then we took over those as well, so which doubled it up, which is nice, you know, so we can kind of give coverage across, you know, every market in various ways. So if one CHR library is taken, there's a completely separate CHR library done by somebody different, you know, curated differently in terms of music beds and drum loops and all that kind of stuff. So all the elements are separate, all the music beds are separate, the producers are separate, and so it gives it kind of a nice feel to really, you know, feel out multiple stations across different markets.
And in your opinion, just, you know, now as an imaging expert, not necessarily in the company, though that'll help inform yourself, is it really, can one person produce two different CHRs, whether it be packages or stations? Because, you know, we see that in radio now, used to be individual O&O stations. Well, then companies started buying stations. Mm-hmm. Then companies started having multiple stations in the same format in the same market. Mm-hmm. And of course, at times you have the same producer. So can in your opinion, can that be done well? What are the factors that go into doing it well, if it can, you know, doing the same format twice, whether it be a service or a station in the same area?
In the same area, I think it can be difficult, you know, doing multiple stations that could be the same format. I think it really kind of comes down to the writing and the style approach of how you produce one station. You know, say if you were doing two CHRs in the same market, which I wouldn't recommend, one could be, you know, full-blown, like, shelled-out material like you might find on a production library or something like that, you know, with a lot of artist drops and a lot of zips and zings and flair and that type of stuff. And then maybe on the other side, you could have one station that's totally listener-driven, like a Power 106 here in L.A., you know, that for the most part, 99% of the time, their VO people are just real people, and they're just saying real things, you know, quote-unquote real things that we have them say. I mean, there's different ways to approach, you know, say a CHR, for example, and have it still be done by the same person. Like I said, you know, producing two of the same format in the same market, I wouldn't recommend, and it's probably not a good thing for anybody involved, really. But like I said, you know, it's different people producing, you know, each CHR library for us, different people producing each country library. So even if there is, you know, some overlap from our library standpoint in the same market, it's two totally different takes on that format, which is nice and makes a big difference. So,
and I'm sure we'll kind of circle back to, you know, your day job, as it were.
Sure.
But I want to talk a little bit more about kind of the custom imaging work you do. Now, you still have stations that you produce the custom imaging for, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I've got quite a few, probably about 20 stations, more or less.
Yeah, that's what I thought. That's insane right there, because, you know, this isn't just, I mean, you're not just simply using shells and slapping VO on stuff for these stations. This is custom imaging work you're doing, right?
Yeah, that's right. Exactly right. Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, every PD is different. So, every PD writes, you know, all their own scripts and all that kind of stuff, so you have to tailor everything to that for sure.
And I guess my first question is, how the hell do you find the time to do all this?
It's hard, man. I'll tell you, it can be a daunting task. There's no doubt about it. You know, I don't know what it was, but, you know, 3.5, 4 years back when I first kind of got involved with Benstown, I guess it'd be about 4 years now, you know, freelance when I was still working in Albuquerque, I just had some kind of feeling that Benstown was going to change my life somehow. I don't know what it was. I just knew that there was a good vibe, and I thought that this model was, you know, really something that was innovating. It was going to be groundbreaking for sure. And I got my first imaging client, and I was like, oh my God, how am I going to manage, you know, my day job in Albuquerque plus this one client and do all this stuff? And it was going to be tough, and there's no doubt about it. It's hard. You know, it's really, it comes down to you know, time management. It comes down to, you know, being able to block off everything else and focus on one project for a given amount of time. I mean, you know, if you've been doing this for a long time and, you know, a customer sends you, you know, one page of imaging or a half a page of imaging or something like that to cut, you know, based on your relationship with them and just, you know, what you've been doing for so long, you can kind of gauge more or less how long it's going to take you to put something together. And you kind of know just by reading it, you know, how involved that piece is going to be. So, you know, I get into the office every day about, you know, in between like 7:15 and 7:30, more or less. I kind of take that first 30 minutes to kind of check out my day, see what's going on, what customers have what waiting for me, and then just kind of try to budget out the time and plan it out accordingly, knowing that I've got, you know, stuff to do for my customers, plus I've got stuff to do for, you know, the Bennstown libraries and obviously everything that Bennstown does. And all of that is obviously Bennstown related. But yeah, I mean, it's a lot of work. There's no real good answer for me to tell you how I do it all. It's just it's really just kind of buckling down and making sure my time management is there and putting the time and effort, you know, that it takes for each individual client into it without, you know, letting anything suffer, you know.
And let me try and quantify it, I guess, a little bit just to give us an idea. You know, you don't need to go into too much detail, but yeah. Each week, you know, give us a ballpark of the hours you're working and kind of divide it up, you know, your duties in relation to sort of being the boss of the formats,
yeah,
and then to customize imaging for these client stations.
You know, every week can really vary. You know, for the Bennstown side of things and the libraries, you know, I've got three of the formats that I oversee myself that I produce all of the custom imaging for the libraries. That includes branding, sweepers, promos for three different libraries on the Bennstown side. You know, that takes up a good portion of the week, that's for sure. Some weeks I get lucky and all my clients are serviced and, you know, they don't need a whole lot, a few updates here and there. Other weeks, it's pretty crazy. But there's certainly, you know, there's some weeks in there where, you know, I'll produce, you know, a couple hundred imaging elements in a week. There's no question about it. You know, it's pretty tough to kind of gauge how it all comes together. You know, there's certainly time in there that's spent on, you know, overseeing all of the syndicated shows that we do, Flashback and Melissa Etheridge and the Jim Brickman Show, and making sure all the guys, you know, are on point with that and making sure all the production schedules are being met and the script writers have everything they need and all the tools that they need. You know, for the most part, in terms of overseeing everybody, you know, I really trust my team, and we've got a great team around here and a lot of people that are really passionate about what we do. I think that's the cool thing that's you know, has kind of struck a chord with everybody that sees Bennstown, is that everybody is just having fun and really just kind of out there to kick some ass, you know what I mean? And make great products, you know, and put fun and put imaging kind of back into the game, and just to make what we do cool again. You know, I think there's a lot of luster lost in the game over the past couple of years with you know, all the different things that have happened throughout the business, and you know, it's a juggling act for sure. But I think as long as you keep a positive head, man, and you just kind of keep rolling forward, I mean, that's all you can really do. You know, there's various ways to kind of keep your head straight. You know, like I said, I kind of check everything out in the morning, see what's going on, and then kind of juggle it from there. Certainly, there's meetings and all this other stuff involved, but somehow it always gets done every week. You know, that doesn't mean to say I don't work. You know, like I said, I come in, you know, a little after 7, and I'm here until about 6 o'clock, more or less, every day. And then, you know, sometimes there'll be nights where I'll go home and work at night for a couple more hours. You know, I've got a mixed show that I do too that runs in a couple different markets, so it's hectic. There's no doubt about it.
So let's go back in time a little bit. You said you were in Albuquerque. Did you go from Albuquerque to L.A. about a year and a half ago or so?
I did, yeah, exactly. I started in Albuquerque when I was 14. You know, I started just kind of like the old radio story goes, man. I used to just sit in my room by myself. I'm an only child, so I'd sit in the room. And back in the day when your PC had a little mini editor on it that was just a little one track, like little small window as big as your thumb was, I would sit there and try to record stuff into my computer and edit it, and I would call and harass, you know, the DJs and win contests and stuff, and, you know, eventually just kind of befriend them. And I asked if I could be an intern one day at some big sticker stop that's the original Wild 106 in Albuquerque. If you're an Albuquerque radio guy, you know what I'm talking about, was having at the time. And they said yes, and that was kind of, you know, the rest is history. You know, I got let go from there maybe like a year or two later, you know, as the business goes. And I was like 16 or something, and, you know, got to be on the air for my first first time like doing middays at like 15 for like a week until they realized they put a 15-year-old on the radio. and then, you know, I went to a few other stations. I went to Univision after that and went to KISS in Albuquerque. I was there for a couple of years, got fired from there. I went to Clear Channel.
What'd you do?
That one was, so at the time I was DJing in nightclubs on the weekends. I was doing like weekend fill-ins. I was doing like a mix show and I was doing like weekend fill-in stuff. And I would be live from like 6 to 10 or whatever it was. And then I would go straight to the club and DJ at the club from like 11 to close, you know, to like 2 in the morning or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I was still in high school, I think. I was like 17 or whatever at the time. And we had just gotten a new automation system. And it was my job to go back to the radio station to make sure that it chained over to the next day. And somebody else was going back to the station, to take the van back or whatever. And I had asked them to make sure that it chained over the next day, kind of pawning off my responsibilities, you know, in hindsight. They said they did it. They didn't. I got a phone call the next day at about noon asking what had happened. And, you know, me being a 17-year-old kid lied about it and said I came back. And they caught me red-handed. Basically, the person that said they went back, you know, said they didn't check it. It wasn't their responsibility, and they were right. It was my responsibility, and I didn't check it, and they fired me. So that's how it goes.
Was that is that Clear Channel Albuquerque?
No, that was Univision. And then I went to Clear Channel after that. I was at Clear Channel after that for like 6.5 years. A good experience. And then after that, I went to American General Media for about 3 years until I came here.
So you stayed in Albuquerque the whole time, though. You basically cut your teeth there and you stayed there the whole way.
Yeah, exactly. You know, for anybody that has been there or knows the market, Albuquerque is one of those kind of, you know, everybody says their market's different, but Albuquerque really is different. The population's different. The people there are different. What works there is different. And it's one of those good medium-sized markets that's super competitive, that really kind of lets you cut your teeth and get into the nitty-gritty of having radio wars still and people having a good time and really teaching you a lot. There's a lot of good people that have come through Albuquerque and been PDs. You know, Mark Allen, Tic Tac is one of them. You know, he went on to do all kinds of big things, Q102, you know, and now in New York and a bunch of big stuff. Tom Naylor, Jammer was a PD that I worked for. You know, he's down in New Orleans now. There have been a lot of good people that have really, you know, that have come through Albuquerque and a lot of good people that are still there and a lot of good talented people. And I was one of those guys that, had so many, like you said, kind of so many different jobs going on and always had a bunch of different stuff to do. That I was lucky enough to be able to stay there, you know, and make a really nice living for myself, which was awesome and is rare to do and hard to do. You know, it was really one of those things where I'm not saying I didn't look for jobs other places. Certainly I did. And I applied for jobs other places and I didn't get them, you know, but it was a good place for me to really hone my skills and to really kind of, you know, love radio in a market that loves radio, you know.
You know where I get most all of my knowledge of Albuquerque?
How's that?
I don't know.
With Breaking Bad, I assume.
Yeah.
You know, we just got on the Breaking Bad bandwagon. We just finished it maybe a couple of months ago, right after the finale ended. So we finally got caught up.
And me
it's,
too.
It's a, man, what a great, like the high school he teaches at is the high school I went to, you know. And,
is that right?
Yeah. I mean, it's like,
really?
Yeah, it's like right down the street from my parents' house. I took a little drive by there while I was back for the holidays. I was like, oh yeah, you know, it's Albuquerque's a great city, man. You know, it's a testament to shows like Breaking Bad that, you know, when they filmed there, when they were done filming, they had wrapped. They bought a billboard campaign all over the city, digital billboards and regular billboards and everything that said that had Jesse and Walt on them, you know, and said, Albuquerque, thanks for the years. We had great chemistry or something like that, something to that effect. and yet it's true. You know, they all, from what we all heard and everybody that came into the stations, they all loved it. And it's a special place. There's no doubt about it. Albuquerque holds a special place in my heart. That's for sure. Not the meth, but Albuquerque.
Yeah, you would have been there for the bulk of that show. Then I guess there's no ill will. Like the city of itself doesn't feel like they were portrayed so bad that they actually feel bad about the situation.
No, I don't think so. You know, not that I know of anyway. I think that there's a lot of things that can put Albuquerque on the map, and to be involved in a show that's as great as that, you know, that show, albeit it was surrounded by drugs and really bad stuff, you know, portrayed the city pretty well though, and you could really tell the passion that people felt in that show for that city.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, and it's a beautiful place. There's no doubt about it. You know, it's like I said, it's a different city, man. But it's good people in Albuquerque. Lots of strong people, and I don't think a little meth's not gonna bring us down. You know.
Yeah, well, that's cool. It's good to hear people talk up their towns. You know, it's better to hear passion for it. But you brought up kind of the club scene, club DJ.
Yeah,
you've actually played some pretty big gigs. But tell me a little bit about that side of your career.
Yeah, the DJing stuff, man, has always been a love. You know, my parents bought me my first set of decks, you know, when I was the same
1200s?
Thing. 1200s? No, you know, I'm actually a digital kid. I started on CDs, believe it or not.
You never actually went to vinyl? See, I've noticed maybe even recently that people who didn't even start on vinyl are going to vinyl, or at least having that as an option, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I've had turntables in the past, obviously, and like you said, I've gone from CDJs to turntables and whatnot. I'm really comfortable on CDJs, though. I don't know what it is. It's just kind of like, you know, it's one of those things you grew up on, you know what I mean? And for me, it started when I worked at KISS in Albuquerque, and I started doing a mix show, and it was something I started, you know, to gain a real passion for. And I started playing nightclubs when I was in high school, and, you know, it was one of those things that was like a side hustle for me. It was, you know, it was one of those things I could just kind of do on the side and make some extra money and, you know, go out at night. I was a young single kid anyway, so I was going to go out to the nightclubs either way. And, mm-hmm. you know, I like to dance, and I like to have a good time at nightclubs. So it kind of took over from there. You know, I didn't get a chance to do a real mix show again after KISS until I left Clear Channel. Well, I guess that's not true. You know, when I was at Clear Channel, I had a syndicated show with Zio Radio Networks that's no longer around. It was in like 40 markets or something. It was a syndicated show. They would send me the playlist, and I would just kind of go off of what was on the playlist. Mm-hmm. You know, all the while doing the nightclubs and that type of stuff. And then once I moved to American General Media from Clear Channel in Albuquerque, like I said, like 4 years ago, I got my first chance to really program my own mix show and kind of make it something, you know, that I thought was going to be different and was going to kind of change the game. And it successfully did that in Albuquerque, which was really cool and kind of one of those things that's, you know, you don't get to see people call mix shows by names a lot. And it was a show that we called the Twix Mix at the time. It was a Twitter mix show, and people could, you know, tweet in their requests and that type of stuff. And it was all house music. It was all EDM stuff. And it, you know, kind of struck a chord right at that time that was something that the city was missing and something that the city needed, it turns out. And, you know, it really kind of helped further my DJ career along. And like you said, I got to play some pretty big shows. I opened for Pitbull. I opened for Pauly D. I opened for Nervo, Porter Robinson.
Like, Pitbull's obviously a humongous name.
Yeah.
And I don't even, I guess I wouldn't even think Pitbull, there'd be a scenario where kind of a local club DJ could even open for Pitbull. So how does that work out? How does that get put together?
You know, it's interesting. His last tour, he had Havana Brown, who's also a DJ, you know, and has had a few, you know, top 40 records here and there. She was on the tour, and then they were looking for just local supporting acts, and that turned into hiring a bunch of local DJs all over the country to do their shows. And, you know, I got a call from Live Nation one day, who I had a working relationship with just because of, you know, the nature of the radio business and producing spots for mm-hmm. them and so on and so forth. And they called me and asked me if I wanted to be on the show. And I was like, well, yeah. I mean, absolutely. And, you know, it was cool because it was like, you know, they billed me on the flyer and on the tickets and everything. I was on the Facebook ad, and it was like, it was really one of those cool things. You know, I was like, holy shit, like I'm going to play in front of like 10,000 people. And it was pretty crazy, man. It was a lot of fun. It was a really, really cool experience. And then, you know, that's like the biggest stage in Albuquerque too, where the venue was at the Pavilion. And so, you know, to be able to play that stage at home was really special. You know, my parents came out, and we had like just in case shirts made and all this different stuff. And it was fun, man. It was a cool night, you know.
So, you know, maybe a lot of people listening to this podcast might not care too much about that side, but I'm interested, and some people will. DJing in a club is obviously much different than being put on a stage mm-hmm. and DJing for that crowd. Mm-hmm. You know, how does that, I guess, do you still just kind of do your thing? Or is it just a whole, is it a different muscle you're working in the brain, a different skill set?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of a different skill set. You know, with what we do in imaging, you know, you don't really know who's listening to it, essentially. You know, you don't know the reaction of what people,
sure.
you know, except for the people that are in the immediate, you know, room with you. You know, you don't really know what the impact is of that piece that you made, as cool as it might be. You know, but in a nightclub or on a stage like that, you know, the reaction is immediate. And it's something that you can't really feel unless you're on a stage like that. You know, it's you know, if you drop a record that people don't like, it's gonna, you know, they're gonna walk off the dance floor, and it's up to you to get them back. But there's certainly some similarities, you know, that would go between things we can learn, you know, from being on a stage and being in front of a bunch of people like that, that you can kind of, you know, take over and cross over into your production. I think for sure.
The producers